Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast. I'm not sure I'll keep that burp in. For Tuesday, July 19th, 2022, the pre-Comic-Con edition. That's Ian Ferguson. I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we'll be talking about, we'll be asking the question, are retro video games a waste of everyone's time and money? Polymega issues, Lego sets out the wazoo. Lots of stuff in our intro.
The Waz.
We'll be talking about maybe a Patreon poll topic in relation to my last day job. Blah, 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 blah. I just gave it away. This weekend, we talked about what
this
we
weekend.
Had done.
This
past
morning.
Weekend.
We talked about this morning, the past weekend.
This morning, we spoke about the past weekend and our bougie mini golf preferences on the exclusive Patreon.
If anyone out there has any pictures of birdies and bogeys from the Galleria Mall in Buffalo, send them to me.
So you go to patreon.com/CU podcast for that. And Ian did some DJing this past weekend. I saw Thor, God, and Love and Thunder, not God and Thunder, Love and Thunder. And the backlash was really weird, and I thought it was fine. It was fine. It was goofy, a little more goofy than I would have liked, but it was fine. Christian Bale is obviously great in everything, so whatever.
Yeah.
It was fine. Yeah.
I'll go see it at some point.
And my Amazon Fire Stick broke on, like, Saturday, 3 days after the Prime Day sale ended, when it would have been, like, $15 to get a new one, and it bricked. It just wouldn't operate anymore. I got a new one, so... I had to watch cable TV on my phone and computer. Oh no, or YouTube TV, I should say, not cable TV.
But, it's not so bad to do that. I do it.
No, but like I like to relax. That's an awesome couch. I fall asleep on the couch all the time. I like to just be on the couch, have my phone, looking at Twitter, doom scrolling while watching, you know, SportsCenter or
sure,
Around the Horn or something. That's all. It's different than being. This is like workstation over here.
Right,
it's not the same thing.
Oh, I meant like just running an HDMI cord
from your computer.
Oh
yeah, I could do it from the laptop. You're right,
and then you just keep your mouse next to you and your remote, and just log into the Netflix app, and it's the same thing.
What is this? The 2000s?
It works.
They have HDMI in the early 2000s. I don't know if they did by then. So yeah, Pat, they did. This came out this year. The 1.0. Anyway. I want to talk about EA making DLC free, which is basically what we suggested Ubisoft do last week.
Yeah, it's not as like... All right, so EA is making DLC free. Hey. We talked about this last week. I know. I'm just getting myself set up. So basically, anything that was for BioWare games on the Origin store, most BioWare games, Dragon Age Origins, Dragon Age 2, Mass Effect 2, and Mass Effect 3, are all becoming free. Apparently, this is just mind-boggling to me. I would have made so much fun of it if we knew it at the time. EA has multiple different currencies on the Origin store.
Oh.
One of them was called BioWare points.
Okay.
Which there were a form of currency that you used to buy BioWare specific DLC expansion packs and shit.
They tied it to that dev.
Yeah,
publisher,
basically. Okay. Yeah, so very weird.
Okay.
You could purchase them for the in-game content packs. Basically, they're doing away with the BioWare points, and because of that, they're making all of those expansions that you would have to have bought with BioWare points free. And then the multiplayer packs are not being made free. Afterwards, they can be purchased using credits that you earn in-game.
Okay.
So that's not so bad.
Well,
it was weird to get to a weird place where you had to do that by making very, like,
you had to buy multiplayer packs? Well, you got to play the game? Okay, that's...
Anyways. So, I mean, it's not a bad...
outcome?
Well, I thought you were about to play something, and you didn't.
What was I supposed to play, Ian?
I don't know. You were reaching for your soundboard, and I'm not going to speak over your soundboard.
I said it. I usually don't say it and hit it.
Anyway, so yeah, it's a decent outcome and an idea, at least, of what I think companies should be doing once they start to remove support for these games.
Yeah, just put it out for free. People that bought it 10 years ago or 5 years will be pissed, but it's better than just stripping it away and you can't access
it. If they're pissed over that, they need to find fucking something better
I'm just saying.
Their life to focus on. Holy shit. But yeah. Yeah, they're mostly old games too. Like, it's been years.
Well, what's the Mass Effect? Is it the Mass Effect? Like HD remake or no? It's just three came out like what, 6-7 years ago. When did that come out?
I don't even.
The one people hated the ending, so they changed it.
Yeah,
people were complaining about it.
When did that come out?
It's been a while since that came out.
2012. So. 10 years ago.
10 years since the third game.
Yeah, I was gonna say I would have actually put it at even older.
I thought we talked about it in the podcast that people were whining about the ending. I guess not. It was before the podcast. Holy shit!
Yeah.
Wow. Class action lawsuit for PS5 is going forward. It looks like.
I don't have a whole lot to say about this, but it's like every new console generation, there's a problem, and every new console generation, the companies try to squash it and keep it down low because they don't want it to affect their sales. When you get to things like the Red Ring of Death, there's nothing anymore a company can do to contain it. It's just a fucking nightmare of an unreliable console. I haven't heard, and granted, I'm not saying it's not true, I just haven't been paying attention to the PS5. I haven't heard of a lot of problems with the PS5, but clearly there are some, and one of them appears to be that they randomly shut down while you're playing games.
Should be a problem.
That sounds like it's not a good thing. I mean, you buy a PlayStation 5 almost exclusively to play games, so the class action lawsuit is going forward.
It's filed in Illinois federal court alleging violations of state and federal consumer law. According to the complaint, the PS5 contains a defect that causes the console to suddenly power down while the user is playing video games, often losing save gameplay. All right. I mean, it costs several hundred dollars, this console. You'd hope
you'd want it to work well.
I mean, an Xbox 360 didn't. There's a lot of bad consoles that were thrown into garbage bins and landfills, like millions, but...
I spent every day at work for, like, 2.5 years repairing fucking 360
consoles. I mean, that will probably go down in history as the worst hardware designed for a console that just failed.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to. What was the failure rate in those? Like, 20%? 15%? I mean, it wasn't low.
Yeah, how many years until we get the retrospective on, like how bad that was?
I mean, that was 15 years ago, so I think at this point...
Yeah. 2006.
The Red Rings probably started at, what, 7 and 8? When the height of it?
It was immediate? It was immediate, yeah. I mean, it's all the earlier models are far more at risk. The later original models are less at risk, but still very, very unreliable. It wasn't until they released the remodel, the Slim, that the 360 became
a reliable console.
We still got them in for repairs, but no larger of a rate than like PS3s and other stuff.
Sure. I remember when I found mine. Remember I told you I found the Modern Warfare 2 bundle at the swap meet for like $20. And I said, Ian, I think I called you at the time. What are the odds? I said, Ian, what does this cost? I said, okay, it'll cost you this past $60 or whatever to get it. I was like, okay, then even still, it's still worth it. It worked though. Like it was
right.
It was amazing.
Sure.
I still have it. I mean, it was not a red ring number. You'd assume at the swap meet,
any loose, untested 360 console is red ringed.
Yeah. And that was like 2009 or late 2009, early 2010. It was still a new console. It wasn't, you know what I mean? It was still in the Xbox One hadn't come out yet. So it was like shocking. Anyway, Ian, we have a small update.
Update.
From the man, Robert Stack. GameStop, NFT marketplace. There were pirated games on there via NFTs for a while. That if you bought the NFT, you got access to games. I think they were removed from there, but there was tweets about it. There was a game called Galactic Wars that was on there. Pico 8 games were being sold by someone. Let's see, Volcano Byte said, hey, GameStop NFT, why do you allow this NFTs to be sold on your site? Who has given this user permission to sell these Pico 8 games as their own? Are you crazy or you have no respect or anyone? And I didn't see any articles about this. When I clicked on it, it was gone.
Yeah, it looks like it's
gone. But it looked like if there's no oversight of who's uploading these NFTs on even GameStop site, we're talking copyright infringement, trademark infringement can be happening.
Right.
Are you shocked by this?
No.
Are we shocked by this?
No, we're not.
And this happened within like 3 days of the shop being open, 3-4 days.
Yeah.
This happened.
It's going to be a nightmare. I cannot wait until the financials come out about how poorly this is doing for GameStop.
About what the sales actually are.
Yeah.
Versus how much they sunk into this shit.
I mean, that's got to come out eventually, right? I feel like that's got to be something that comes out in a stockholder report.
I guess. The person that uploaded it had a response. Hey guys, some folks on Twitter encouraged us to reach out to you and said you were upset about the game listing on the GameStop marketplace. And they said, your game has the unlicensed license on it for commercial use, so what's the issue here? And it's like, no, dude, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
You can't just sell something that's not your own.
Right.
And then pair it to a fucking NFT. It's ridiculous.
Fucking idiots.
Yeah, so that's all. There wasn't like an article about it, I don't think. So, anyway. Let's talk about what's going on in Europe right now with loot boxes. Eurogamer article. Eurogamer, your source for gaming in Europe.
Yeah. UK government demands changes to better protect young boxes. People from loot boxes. Game companies and platforms need to do more. So we've talked a lot in the past about how Europe, UK has been, pretty...
They've been on the forefront of
the forefront of recognizing loot boxes as a predatory practice
and deeming it gambling, and
deeming it gambling,
trying to regulate it in some aspects.
So back in June 2020, they launched a call for evidence on loot boxes in response to the digital culture, media, and sport inquiry into immersive and addictive technologies. They say loot boxes should not be available to children without consent of parents or guardians, and it will not hesitate to consider legislation if companies do not bring in sufficient measures to keep players safe. This is all well and good.
The old ESRB thing from the 90s. You got to regulate yourselves or we're going to do it.
Right. So this is all well and good, but I don't think anything's really going to come of it, unfortunately, without legislation. And I don't know... Technically, they shouldn't be available to children already without the consent of parents and guardians, because children under the age of 18 don't hold purse strings. I mean, they can have their own money.
The credit card could be in the system. That's the problem, I guess.
Right. Parents. I guess. But then, how are you going to verify that? What are you going to use? You could use some sort of two-step verification that sends it to a parent's phone and they have to okay it. I think that could probably work. But I don't think the video game industry is really going to get a fire under their ass until legislation comes in.
Why would EA do something that's going to make them less money voluntarily?
Right.
Well, even if it's like 10%, 15%, why would they do that? You're talking about the ESRB, tens or hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, the ESRB and game ratings probably impacted sales a little bit at first, but it wasn't cutting directly into the revenue stream. This actively loses companies millions directly. And sometimes billions of dollars.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be a lot harder to get modern video game companies to say, yeah, okay, we'll regulate ourselves.
Sure. You can regulate your spending at ultimatenintendo.com for sure.
You sure can.
You can spend a little or a lot on RBI baseball stickers, certain NES and Super Nintendo guidebooks. The CU podcast and Owlpin is back in stock.
Get it.
There it is. Well, Ian's yawning a lot.
Woo!
Woo! Yeah, that felt good, Ian.
New medicine makes me very sleepy. That's why I'm drinking 2 Diet Cokes. I apologize.
Pixel Pet, Hairpin, and more at ultimatenintendo.com. I'll be on Cameo. No, I'm not. I'm always on Cameo, but no one does it. Cameo.com/PetCountry. I get a cameo once every 3 weeks at this point. That's okay. I'll be on Twitch Wednesday, twitch.tv/ContraCode for all your 80s, 70s, 60s, and 90s commercials needs.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's a good time. Ian thinks it's fun once every 7 months when he's there. He thinks it's a good time. We actually have a chat command, exclamation point Ian, and it'll say whether or not you're in the server. Did you not know that?
No, I didn't. That's pretty fun.
So it'll say Ian is not in the chat. Then when you do show up,
The best mod, Audrion has to change it real quick to say Ian is in the chat. You did not know that. You didn't notice that last time you were there?
No, I did not.
Were you there for the 100th? You were there for the 100th.
Yeah, briefly.
That was like 10 weeks ago at this point. That's fun. And we're going to be at the Long Island.
We are. That's Retro coming up real soon.
In a month.
Is it a month?
It's a month.
It's, it feels like it's mid-August. Perpetually 2 weeks away. So,
Really?
That's how it feels to me.
It feels like I was just at a convention a week ago, and it felt like it was 3 weeks. And I was at another one before, and I thought that was 3 months ago.
My sense of time is all screwed up lately from being out of town for the work thing and that Comic-Con this weekend.
We're going to be at Comic-Con probably. Yeah, the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo is August 12th to 14th. That's 4 weeks, I believe, from... Is that 4 weeks from a couple days ago, or is that 4 weeks from this weekend? It's coming up. That's all you got to know. We'll be there with bells on, with my pies on, my New York, New Jersey brethren, and I will treat a couple people to pizza, including Ian, if he's nice to me.
3.5 weeks.
So it's three weeks from this weekend?
3 weeks from this weekend.
Holy.
Week of the 29th, week of the 5th, and then the convention.
Oh, my God. It's just this word.
Weekend.
Christmas is coming up soon. Jeez, Christmas in July. Here we are. And then I'm doing something special. You demanded it. The compilation. It's going to be three parts of the Tommy voice messages. Three parts. I'm going to premiere the first one. This Saturday or Sunday? It'll be... Follow me on Twitter, but I'll premiere it. It'll be fun, and I'll do them like... once a week, and we'll get them out there. It's what you demanded. You demanded it. And there might be a reveal of who actually voiced them by request. I think it's
and
fun.
I'll be I'll say it right now. There's a few people who were so certain they know who exactly it is, and it's not.
Oh, people like in the anti or critical Amico community are like, oh yeah, we know.
Well, in the anti Amico and pro Amico community, there are people who swear it's one person, and it's not. But I love the conviction.
Yeah.
With which they're wrong.
Besides me and Ian and the person that has done it, there might be two other people on the planet that knew.
Maybe.
And that's just because they might have shared a Sunday with the person at Friendly's a few weeks ago, and that's it.
Like, right.
No one fucking knew. And I just love how arrogant how people think they know about these things or the inner workings of things, and they know absolutely nothing.
Right.
I'm just going to rub your nose in the fucking dirt about that as much as I can. I think it's hysterical.
We have a short, because we can't make it a full topic, scumbag
seller
of
the
week
introversion
week. Introversion so there's what? A seller. This is coming from Captain Bregal on Twitter. There is an eBay seller in the UK that has been printing counterfeit game soundtracks. They are selling for 30 to 50 USD, and then sellers in Japan are buying them and flipping them for 200 to 300 USD.
Oh, God.
And one of the ones they're doing is a Banjo-Kazooie CD soundtrack. If you look at the cover, the back, you can find spots that easily look different. So, like, if you look at the official versus counterfeit cover, if you look at the O's on Banjo-Kazooie, they're totally different than the O's on the counterfeit. They have like a shine to them on the first one, and on the inside, on the second one, the interiors are like way more muted. The printing, the color on the discs is off by a pretty decent amount of, it's a pretty decent shade difference. And then the inner rings look different. Honestly, these are the same sorts of things you look for when you buy a Sapphire or something. Always look at the inner rings. Always look at the paint color on the printing on the CD. And there's always going to be some sort of weird difference.
Yeah, it's very difficult to do a full counterfeit of one of these things.
You need of a CD, it's very hard.
You need basically the same expensive, probably replication sort of setup and things like that. So anyway, I'm confused here. Are they in cahoots, or are the people in Japan not realizing they're counterfeit?
Well, I have a feeling to me it sounds like kind of like laundering to almost give a facade of
legitimacy.
I don't know.
This is like an international crime if they're in cahoots with each other.
Yeah, so I don't know exactly, but I'm thinking they sell them for that much, and then I really have no idea.
We don't have the eBay listing on here. Oh, we do. It's there. It is. It's down below. They ended the listing. The seller is see original listing. Who's the seller on here? The culture O underscore seven. That's it. The last one sold for $25.
Oh, and the disc art uses the wrong font entirely, so you should be able to check that.
Oh, you're not going to like this. If you look at what else they're selling original soundtrack from The Thing.
Fuck them.
Oh, Morricone did this. Did the score for that?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
You need to watch that fucking movie. Watch it!
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Watch it!
I watched more of that than you watched Betrayal Little China before I told you to watch it. I've seen a few scenes of The Thing.
Yeah, we'll watch the whole thing.
I've seen that X-Files episode that ripped it off. I know what's up.
Big Trouble in Little China.
You ever see that X-Files episode? Series? It's fucking awesome.
It's really good. It's a little different, but...
But
the setting is very similar.
It's really, really good. I'm telling you, those first 2-3 seasons of X-Files are banger after banger. I brought that up before.
Oh, yeah. No, they're fantastic.
Yeah, that was great. What else is going on here? Nintendo acquired an animation studio.
Oh, did they?
Mm-hmm. So this is interesting news, and this is why. Nintendo has been trying to get their Mario picture made.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder either if there's been trouble with that, or they now realize, hey, we can save a shitload of money if we just have our own animation studio and just do this ourselves.
Well, someone I know said that they saw a first cut. They were shown the first cut of it.
Of the Mario movie?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And that was months ago. So I also wonder, and it's a person that I absolutely trust to have actually said that and seen it. Unless they misspoke and they meant they saw a trailer, but they said they saw an early cut of the movie. And with that being the case,
voice acting?
I'm assuming so, yes.
Okay.
With the amount of silence, no trailer, really no nothing, the movie getting delayed. The movie was delayed, I believe, after this person told me they saw the first cut of it. So I'm really kind of curious what the state of that movie is in.
I'm still perplexed on the casting and how they went off the rails on the voices and they didn't go for something closer to what people expected from the games. I'm not saying you have to have the same voice actors. You didn't need necessarily to bring Charles Martinet, but to go off and just do voices that don't match what the characters are, I just think it's nuts. Maybe that's what it is, but maybe they've realized we can or should do more. So that's what I mean. I'm not saying it's negative news, this, or positive. I don't know what it is, but this is the actual news here from comingsoon.net. They purchased the animation studio behind Pikmin Shorts, which I was not aware of those. Dynamo Pictures, an animation studio in Tokyo that collaborated on several animated Pikmin shorts that premiered on the 3DS. Are you familiar with those?
Nope.
Renamed Nintendo Pictures, the studio will continue to work on the development of visual content utilizing Nintendo IP, according to the press release. Nintendo has decided to acquire 100% of the outstanding shares, excluding treasury shares, of Dynamo Pictures and make it a wholly owned subsidiary to strengthen the planning and production structure of visual content in the Nintendo group.
We'll see how this goes. I remember when Square did the same thing and then put out that Final Fantasy movie and did absolutely nothing with their studio afterwards.
The Final Fantasy movie, I saw in 2001 to see the Spider-Man trailer, or one after that?
There was only one.
Just that crappy one?
Oh, well, there's Final Fantasy Advent Children, but I don't think that ever got a full wide release. The Spirits Within movie got a full wide release.
I still can't believe I saw that just for the Spider-Man trailer. Or teaser, I should say. So this is what I'm going to say about Nintendo. They usually don't make moves like this unless they have a plan, in my opinion. So I'm not saying we're going to see a bunch of animated shows coming out, but we, as Frank would say, it's not nothing. We're not going to see nothing happening from this. I don't know why there has not been more like or animated series regularly. You know, there's always, I mean, Pokemon doesn't really count. You have all these Sonic you know, every other year there's like Sonic series and things like that. Like, why couldn't there have been Mario series the past 30 years?
Because I think, I don't think they're mostly silent characters in the games. And I've said this before, the character is not built in. The personality is not built in.
They had them in the early cartoons.
Right. I mean, for better or for worse.
People loved those cartoons.
Yeah, they weren't bad, but I'm just saying, like, I just don't know. Nintendo worked so hard to sanitize and clean their games that I think it would be hard to... why I think this movie is going to not be great. It's hard to just, like... Because everyone at this point has their own idea of what Mario or Link is like.
Sure, but at some point, he's got to say this is an interpretation. I mean, how many games in before Sonic got a voice? How many games was it before Sonic spoke?
I think, like, one.
One game?
One or two.
Well, they didn't have a voice in the Genesis. What?
No, I'm talking about cartoons.
No, I mean, how many Genesis...
Dreamcast.
So it was like several, like eight, nine games.
Yeah, but there was already... My point is there was already multiple cartoon series that led up to that instructed what his voice was going to be like. So it was easy. It was an easy transition.
So
what are we going to do with Mario? Are we going to go back and make him like the cartoons from the 90s? I'm not saying you can't do it, but I'm saying it's clear to me that it's difficult.
I think people got to get over the fact that it's a different medium and it is going to be what it is. I mean, you're not going to like it. I mean, I hate.
Sure, but people don't have to like it, and I think that's what's going to happen.
But like, yeah, the Chris Pratt voice is not the way to go. I'm not saying that. I would like something more traditional. There goes my 81 shirt on the chair over there. But we'll see what happens. But they're going to do something. But you can do a Star Fox series easily, do an adventure series.
Sure, a Star Fox series would be easy.
You can do a Zelda series.
No.
No, you refuse. No. You can do a Samus series.
You could do Metroid. I think you could do Star Fox.
I think they're going to do more than that, Ian, for... They're gonna.
I'm not saying they're not. I'm saying it's gonna be bad.
Okay. Is this Lego Bowser bad?
No, this Lego Bowser is fucking incredible. So I'm looking forward to this. Is like the one thing I want to make sure I see this weekend at Comic-Con.
It's gonna be at Comic-Con, you think?
Yes, the it already says. It says touching down at San Diego Comic-Con.
It's your topic.
I mean, you can't put a 14-foot, Bowser just
14
anywhere.
Feet.
This thing is 14 feet, 663,900 Lego bricks inside of it. It'll be there from 7/21 to 7/24. It's mechanized. And it's massive. And I love Bowser Boy. Love him. So I got to see that and get my picture taken with it.
You love King Koopa, huh?
Yep. And then in addition, and also in video game related Lego news, just like they did the Lego NES a few years ago.
Oh, okay, I can't comment on that at all.
I mean, you can. It's just one thing.
Is it being used to promote other products or just doing it just to do it? I mean, obviously they had their line now.
Oh, probably. I mean, that's what I would assume. They've got the whole Mario line, so sure. It makes sense.
Yeah, Mario, they got Luigi, they got the play sets. Okay.
And there looks like there is a smaller version of this Bowser that you can buy.
Oh, there you go, Ian. I want to dig deeper sometimes.
Gonna be tough for me to.
How much smaller is it? Like a foot?
I don't know, but I'm gonna have to probably buy it.
You're gonna have to probably buy it.
Yeah. Rainy day Legos. There's nothing I really want at Con this year, anyways. And then they're doing the Atari, just like they did the NES. They're doing a Lego Atari for a lot of money.
It looks gorgeous.
It does.
Slap a Lego penis on there, Ian. They have a fake wood grain that looks pretty funny.
Yeah.
Like how they kind of faked it with like little like
yep
multicolor line going through it. There's carts. There's Adventure and Centipede and Asteroids. No combat, huh? Combat. Is there like a rights issue with the name Combat? Is that why you don't see it come up in some of these multi-packs? Combat gets pushed to the side.
I don't know.
That's something I've noticed there. So you get the console. It looks like, is that life-sized? It looks close. You get a console.
Oh my God. Okay. I was wondering what the cool thing would be. So there is no like TV or anything like that?
No.
There's a fold-out diorama.
Oh.
Scroll down. That's actually awesome. Oh yeah, I saw that. That's awesome.
You get like a late 70s, early 80s little living room setup.
Yep.
With the green carpet that's the color of the tile. Like there's a kitty cat. There's things on the wall.
Oh, that's cool as hell.
This looks life-size, the console, or close to it. You get one joystick with a wire.
Looks like a Vader in size, yeah.
But it's a four-switcher.
Yeah.
But it's like the second version. And then you get, could be my favorite thing, you get the cart holder.
Yeah, that's cool.
Remember those cart holders they had? You probably had them at Luno Video Games, two locations. They were usually like, what, 12 carts or there was two columns of them. This, it's weird. I actually like this on the surface better than the NES one because of the interchangeable carts, because the diorama is a cute little thing.
I guess there's multiple dioramas.
Because of that and because of the cart holder, it's more kitschy. I don't know. The NES one's still cool. I'm not saying that. But the fact that you can make your own TV and do the little thing and you go through it, I get how that. I don't know. This seems a little bit more interesting to me, which is weird. I never thought I'd say that.
No, I agree. This is actually kind of neater.
Yeah. I guess they had to pump it up. It's $240, which is about the price at the NES one. The NES one you can buy for $230 brand new, so in the same ballpark. Almost 2,600 pieces. Almost. It's like, they fell short. Should have did a couple more carts to get there. It'll be available August 1st. Obviously, we're celebrating the 50th anniversary. I'm kind of happy that we've had all this good news about Atari come out the past year and a half with the Recharge stuff late last year. This, you have the new set coming out from Digital Eclipse, right? Like, this is what we want. Not fucking Crypto or Hotel or the shitty VCS console. This is
speaker hats.
This is what we want to celebrate Atari. This is the only thing you can do. Is this? This is it for this. This might be it.
Yeah, if you're gonna try to cash in on a nostalgia, cash in on the nostalgia. Like,
yeah,
don't.
Like, I would consider, you know, buying this.
We never. I mean, the hotel thing was just
the whole what?
The hotel thing was just
casino. Casino idea. Yeah. Online crypto casino. It's nuts. It's nuts. We're talking about this Unity boss criticizing mobile developers.
Yeah, this got people in an uproar over the past week, and for good reason. Unity, first of all, was purchased, I believe, by... They were either purchased by or they purchased basically a known malware company. So, yeah, you're one of the most ingrained development environments for game makers, Unity, now is 100% associated with a malware company. But in addition to that,
anti-malware or malware?
No, malware.
Oh, malware.
Malware.
Okay.
Yes. Known malware.
What the fuck?
I'm speaking correctly. I know I love words, but yes, that
doesn't make any sense.
Unity boss and former EA exec John Risitello has also been under fire for comments about monetization and says that a very small portion of the gaming industry doesn't monetize their mobile games. And I think he was talking about developers in general. He also says they're also some of the biggest fucking idiots. And that's not gonna fucking fly with game developers. You know, some people maybe actually look at their games as, you know, a complete thing and don't want to rip customers off and sell a full product. And to call the people who use your products every fucking day big fucking idiots because they don't cheat people out of money is gross. I mean, it's fucking disgusting. I mean, there's not a whole lot more to say about it. It's just dumb as fuck.
Is this the guy behind the Need for Speed gas apps shit? That'd be funny.
So, yeah. I mean, fuck it.
Because he worked at EA. I thought that, you know.
Sure. Funny.
John says, I need the gas button to get money.
He also says things like, I've seen great games fail because they tuned their compulsion loop to 2 minutes when it should have been an hour. Sometimes
compulsion loop. Is that like surprise mechanics, asshole?
Again, I hate corporate CEO talk, but when people talk like this, they no longer care about games. They care about squeezing every fucking penny from you. And they are not to be trusted. That's all I got to say about that.
Speaking to PocketGamer.biz, Risitello said that the mobile games industry had changed and it was no longer the case that developers throw their game over the wall to the publicist and Salesforce with literally no interaction beforehand. That model is baked into the philosophy of a lot of art forms and medium. And it's one I am deeply respectful of. I know their dedication and care. But this industry divides people between those who still hold to that philosophy and those who massively embrace how to figure out what makes a successful product. Here's a problem. Is it John? Your idea of success is not someone else's idea of success.
Right.
That varies wildly based upon the size of the company or dev and, you know, profit margin or what they're happy with. Some might be happy putting out a mobile app that makes $100,000 and they sell it for $3 and with no microtransactions, and that's it. They don't have to make $1 million. They don't have to have whales that spend, you know, $10,000 on your game. I'm not saying it's wrong to design a game like that. There's different models how you want to go, but you can't say it's wrong. That's a weird criticism. I don't understand. Like, what are you afraid that there'll be less compulsion cycles going forward in the industry? I mean,
the only thing I can think of is the more people that do that, the worse off microtransaction games look.
Sure.
But I also think he was probably just talking off the cuff and he's an asshole.
Okay. No. So what's this thing? Go back to the thing about the malware thing. So what happened with Unity? They merged with a malware company. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. It's been all over the news.
Iron Source?
Unity is merging with a company who made a malware installer.
Is that what Iron Source did?
Yes. If you don't know Iron Source, Unity's statement reads, they bring a proven record of helping creators focus on what creators do best, bring great apps and user experiences to life while enabling business expansion in the app economy. Iron Source is also well known for another reason. It developed InstallCore, a wrapper for bundling software installations. If you've searched for a popular program and seen a link to a third-party site with a URL that ended in something like downloadb.net, or hdownload.net, it may have well been InstallCore. If you make the mistake of downloading it, basically it installs ourselves some bullshit.
Was that their goal, though, or they put out this is an open source SDK that was then used from everyone? I mean, they didn't say, like, how we want to use this for malware.
It's a wrapper for bundling software installations. Okay. I mean, they haven't stopped people from doing it, and, I mean, that's generally what wrappers for bundling software installations are for.
Okay. It seems like, how did they grow from that? Then that was their first product. Then they grew after that. A lot of open to U.S. San Francisco. Okay. All right. I'm not looking into Iron Source. People out there in the comments can fight about it. I have no fucking clue. What people can fight about, though, is not getting their Polymega consoles.
I thought we were saving this for next week.
Oh, are we? Okay. Then we're saving for next week.
You were all excited about saving this for next week.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
You'll be snappy. We'll just control X and get rid of it there.
I'm just saying.
We'll just control X.
You were very excited about having a topic preloaded.
I wouldn't know about excited about it. I just think it's nice.
You were.
I wasn't doing cartwheels in my living room.
Pretty close. So we'll look into that a little bit more and come back to you.
We'll see what happens with Polymega. Some people are complaining. We'll see if
there's more news. We'll see if they respond.
This summer is showing welcoming signs of a more normal life ahead. Finally, you can get back to enjoying life's little pleasures, like smiling at your neighbor, seeing a movie, and going to the post office. Okay, some parts of normal life aren't so great, but with Stamps.com, you can skip trips to the post office and save on postage. Mail and ship anytime, anywhere, right from your computer. Send letters, ship packages, and pay less. A lot less, with discounted rates from USPS and UPS. Stamps.com saves businesses thousands of hours and tons of money every year. I've used Stamps.com personally for over 10 years now, shipping out DVDs, t-shirts, stickers, pins, what have you. It's great. It's saving me time and money. Stamps.com brings the same U.S. Postal and UPS shipping services right to your computer. They make it easy for small businesses to mail and ship without needing to take a trip to the post office. Print official U.S. postage and shipping labels 24/7 without having to leave your desk or buy any fancy equipment. All you need is your computer and standard printer. Once your mail is ready, just schedule a pickup or drop it off. It's that simple. It's a no-brainer, Stamps.com. It's saving nearly 1 million small businesses owners like you and me time and money. They offer deals you can't get anywhere else, like up to 40% off USPS and up to 66% off UPS shipping rates. And with their switch and save feature, you can quickly compare carriers to find the best rates every time. Stop wasting time going to the post office and go to Stamps.com instead. There's no risk. With our promo code CU Podcast, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in CU Podcast. That's Stamps.com, promo code CU Podcast. Stamps.com, never go to the post office again.
Retro video games are a waste of everyone's time and money.
According to an article.
According to a reader feature from Game Central in metro.co.uk. So a lot of people sent us this article to check out, and it clearly uses a very clickbaity title. And while I don't agree with everything in here, I think he's throwing out the baby with the bathwater a little too much. He makes some really good points. And basically...
He or they? We don't know who wrote this.
Yeah, good point. Do
we? There's no name on this.
I thought there was... Okay, yeah, they. Yeah, there is no name. Okay, so they, Game Central. they talk about how they don't like people who... first they start off by saying they don't think retro games are that great. We don't know the age of this person. I've found that that is, you know, certainly a opinion that some younger people hold who did not grow up with it. And even some older people who did grow up with them. Games sometimes don't age well. And they talk about how, and it's especially true of some of like the early PlayStation games, what we allowed as passable graphics back then to try new things really don't look, you know, fantastic today. They realize that there's a lot of nostalgia associated with it. And, you know, they don't understand the focus necessarily on backwards compatibility. So they don't, they say that they understand people who would like to buy, who buy these games every once in a while or whatever, who collect them. That's really not their problem. When they get to the crux of their argument, what they're saying is that focus on retro titles too often, especially in the modern day,
for modern systems,
especially in the modern day, pull away from new things happening. And a couple examples they use are Microsoft's excessive focus on backwards compatibility during the Xbox One era, because there really was nothing new coming out. So they were using it as a fallback to get people excited. But as much as I like the backwards compatibility options on stuff like the Xbox, I can tell you personally from working in the game store, not that many people used it. It was a nice feather in Microsoft's cap to be able to say they had it, but ideally, was it really used as much as they think they would have hoped? I don't know.
Well, that was a big selling point on the new Xboxes, right?
Well, that was, yes, but I feel like that's something that people lunged at and they were like, yeah, backward, and then didn't really do a whole lot with, because they realized that playing.
There was no games coming out.
Sure. But that was, I think his thing was they focused too much on that instead of focusing on something new. I agree that I think the focus on the backwards compatibility was because of the lack of something new. I don't think the focus on backwards compatibility, I don't think that prevented something new from coming out.
No, but when you look at from a business perspective, which I like to do, you're talking about backwards compatibility. It's like, okay, We put some R&D into this feature, not a huge amount, versus having potentially hundreds of titles available for people to play with a subscription maybe tied to it. That's a big selling point, and we're going to make a lot of money with that with minimal effort. And from that perspective, I agree with the authors. Like, you are kind of, I wouldn't say you're not stifling innovation. You can do two different things at once. You can walk and chew gum. But if that's a main feature of your newest console,
right.
Why is that a feature? Like, I kind of agree with that point. Like, why is that a feature? Obviously, you have, you want to do preservation and things like that, but you still have these old consoles. I mean, you can still play most of these games. It is kind of strange to lean on that. I do agree. Let me just talk about this. A lot of it's nostalgia. Yeah, I realize that, but this is what they say. But I remember when Microsoft started pushing backwards compatibility, and I was excited. I was excited to put in some kind of my old OG Xbox discs and see how they looked, and I wish I had it because it killed my sense of nostalgia over them. In short, they looked terrible, and in general, they played worse even with enhancements. To you!
To you.
To you, they look terrible. To a lot of people, they look fine. I'm not saying that everyone... people want their upgraded modern HD Banjo game, or they want their upgraded... Crash Bandicoot. They want their updated version. To some people, though, they're fine playing it how they played it when they were, you know, 10 years old, right, in the mid to late 90s. They're fine with that.
So they do go on to make two more points, though, that I think are better thought out, and I agree with mostly. The first is they talk a lot about how the focus on these older games leads to far more remakes and remakes far quicker than we need to see them, and more remakes than we really need of certain games, because they focus on the old games, they focus on past success far too much that they don't, and this is very true, and this is what people said about Naughty Dog when Naughty Dog announced The Last of Us Remaster. Okay, it's a good game, but we just got, well, this is a remake, we just got a remaster that was perfectly fine on the PlayStation 4. And the original game came out on the PlayStation 3, and not
ten years ago,
and not even at the beginning of it, like, you know, a good chunk of the way in.
It's a 10-year-old game.
So, you know, that's a great point. You know, this focus on the past and just milking the same successes over and over again does lead to burnout. It is part of the reason why I don't care about AAA games, and it does literally take staff away from making something new and taking a risk.
That stifles innovation. That stifles creativity. That's going back to the well. Imagine if we re-released, it's a problem in the movie industry of remakes to a lesser degree, but sequels. Sequelitis.
Yes, sequelitis.
We'll just keep putting out sequels because we don't want to take a risk with a new property. But this has happened now with three or four big franchises. You got the Halo remakes, you have Mass Effect remasters, you have this Last of Us. We're like, do we really want to get into this space where on every new console we're going to be remaking each game subsequently? Like, is that really where we're going to get to? Are we going to start seeing it's failed as well. I mean, thankfully we're not seeing some of these older the Grand Theft Auto 3 remake or HD was fucking disastrous. I don't think they're going to try another one of those.
They just said they're remaking Red Dead Redemption.
Great.
Yeah, man.
Great.
It's never going to stop, bud. never, ever.
What do I know? But yes, that does keep teams away. They're really going to remake Red Dead Redemption?
I'm pretty sure that was announced like a week ago because everyone was like, oh, you did a great job.
Is that game 10 years old?
The first one? That was PlayStation 2. So yes, that game's older than 10 years.
Well, Red Dead Revolver.
Oh, Red Dead Redemption. You're right.
Yeah, Red Dead is the sequel, technically. It's like the Soul Calibur to the...
No, you're right. You're right.
2010. It's 12 years, excuse me. But I don't know. Wow.
Yeah, maybe I was wrong.
What?
Maybe
what happened?
I was wrong.
They're not doing a remake?
A new remake leak, likely false.
Okay, good. Because I did see about putting more resources into GTA 6 is why they're pulling off of the online.
Right.
So I guess the point is this. I don't think it's healthy for the industry to remake these games, like you said, because you're gonna have all these people working on these remakes, and then why can't we have new games?
Well, and yeah, and people are gonna get tired of it too. No expression, no creativity, no feeling like you're working on something new or groundbreaking.
And diminishing returns on top.
Yeah.
You just said this would be the second Last of Us remake or remaster in 10 years?
They did one on PS4, and now they're doing the remake on PS5.
Well, this is gonna be up to the consumers to decide the fate. The consumers got a roundly say, no, this is unacceptable. I have two versions of this already. I don't want this third version.
Right.
And that's it. And then they'll stop doing it.
I mean, and it's all part of this race for photorealism, too, which I fucking hate.
Yeah.
I play video games to go to fantasy worlds. I don't play video games to, like, every once in a while, sure, there's games that benefit from it. But for the majority, I'd rather have stylized art and interesting takes.
Yeah. You know what everyone's talking about today? Stray.
Right, which I'm going to buy as soon as I get home.
I just think it's funny, just as an aside, that, like, yeah, I'd heard about this game, but now, like, everyone's talking about this game this day.
In 2017, they released a very short 30-second clip, and I've been waiting for it since.
I just think it's funny because it's, like, it's nice to see a game that isn't, like, just a big shooter or zombie fucking game.
No, absolutely.
And everyone's talking about it, and it's not like this isn't a game worked on by 1,000 people, right? This is a double-A game.
I think it's a pretty small team.
Double-A at most, probably?
Yeah.
And everyone's talking about it, and it's an original game.
Yep.
Look at that. It's an original game.
Yeah.
It's getting good reviews. It's a cat game, so come on. Single player.
Yes.
As well. The developer doesn't even have a Wikipedia page, Blue 12 Studios. I was trying to look up the developer's history. They don't even have a Wikipedia page. So.
Nice.
Small team from the south of France, made up of cats and a handful of humans. There you go. This is what we want to see.
Yes.
Innovation. Untitled Goose Game. You want stuff like that takes risks, different art styles, different game types. And this is how you expand the art form, and this is what's better overall for the industry. Not remakes every 4 years. Go back and play the old one if you can. Go upscale it on your PC if you want. That's my opinion with that.
Another small point that he makes that I do think is pretty decent is he talks about the Starfield trailer and how people finally saw some gameplay and people were let down that it looks like Skyrim. And Bethesda in particular has this habit of not doing a whole lot between. They found a successful formula and they keep churning it out. And he talks about how obsession with these old games, obsession with something like Skyrim, which got 50 gazillion ports, has led companies to just making a new Skyrim, but a different with a different skin instead of. Progressing and working on a better system. The same thing happened with Final Fantasies in the middle years. They were good games, but people got sick of seeing the same battle system over and over again. People don't want to play the same system over and over again, and it's playing it too cautiously because you know people like the old stuff.
I don't know. I'm less bullish on that point just because once you establish a structure to your game and genre. I mean, what are you saying? They shouldn't have done Red Dead because it's basically GTA in the Wild West? I mean, like...
No, but that looks... It looks different. The stories are different. There's different mechanics. I feel like with something like...
Think Starfield's going to have somewhat different mechanics going to space and
I'm sure it does, like but I feel like with Sky... Well, and I don't play Red Dead and GTA precisely because they are similar to each other and I don't like open world games.
Okay.
And I think with something like Starfield, I think that's fine with... You know, Elder Scrolls 6 or whatever one is coming. You keep it that way. But with a new series, I think it's lazy to just use the same mechanics.
I don't know. At some point, the mechanics have to be similar to each other. You can say that about sports games. It's going to be the same mechanics. And you love the MLB games. The mechanics are going to be drastically different year to year, right?
I play some of them.
The show.
I haven't played it in a long time.
But you see my point, though. Is it going to be the same pitch?
But it's the same series, which is what I said. If you're doing a different series, it should feel like a different game.
But how much different can you do the mechanics of an open world game at this point between all of them? I mean, you get items, you have inventory, you talk to people.
All right, then we'll just let everything stagnate forever.
I'm just saying, like, what did you want them to do different in Breath of the Wild in terms of, because that's similar.
Breath of the Wild was very different than previous Zeldas.
But you're saying...
I mean, it's also different than most open world games. They all have their different feeling. What I'm saying is this looks like it's going to feel just like Skyrim.
I think... Okay. All right. I mean... All right.
I'm not saying that everything has to change wildly each time, but it would be nice if different series felt like different games.
I mean, once you establish what works, I think you stick... I mean, it's kind of hard to reinvent the wheel with like a giant... Was it six games in that Elder Scrolls series? It's six? They're doing the six or seven.
I'm saying, again, you don't have to reinvent that. Starfield is not an Elder Scrolls game. Make it feel different.
Okay, we'll see when it comes out. I think being in space and shooting up things and little space buggies.
I'm going to get it, and I hope it's different. Okay. But, I mean, it looks like they're leaning on past successes.
I mean, I said it before. It's my dream game.
Sure.
Because it didn't happen with Star Citizen. That never came fully developed. It's like a half-baked game still. That's my dream game, this. These are the games I'm afraid to play. I still have to play Red Dead appeals to me more than regular GTA. I love like the Wild West theme and being on horses and
it appeals to me more. You know, but
having trains and shit, I love that. Versus just fly around in a helicopter and crash into things. I mean, that's fun too. I'm not going to deny it. I love the GTA games. But all right, anything else in this article here? It's a good. It's not that long of an article, which is nice. It's really clickbaity. And yeah, we kind of agree on some of the points. We disagree on others. Ian, we have a
Patreon. Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go, you look at what we have on offer and you go, hey, I like these guys. I can give them a little money. Give us a little money.
I like these guys. I can give them money.
I can give them a little money.
Works the same at Chippendales.
And then you can get the full video podcast.
Weekly writing from Ian.
You get weekly writing. You get bonus content.
I need a bonus button.
Hangouts.
Once a month if you want.
Which we did last week. And you get access to these poll questions.
And now we have a tier for we have the enamel pin club.
That's right.
So you can get an enamel pin mailed to you in a tier. Plus all the rewards before. A new tier. Check it out. And if you're on the higher tier than the Pin Club, you go on your Patreon, you fill in your address, and Pat will mail you one of the nice enamel pins right there. So let's run down the poll. You do the poll topic. You do it, Ian.
So it is Just how bad was Pat's last day job?
Jesus Christ, Ian. How long have we been doing the podcast? You didn't know how to run this down. In second place, Ian.
19% for how is gaming on the NJ Boardwalk different in 2022? And then just how bad was Pat's last day job? 10-year anniversary. 81 percentage points.
Aren't you curious, Ian? And this comes on the heels. I put out a video yesterday, Monday. I didn't think about it. I think I realized it last week, Ian, that I quit my day job, my awful healthcare market research job. I quit it 10 years ago. I think it was like the first end of the first week, start of the second week in July. And I should have had, I think at one point I might have remembered it as an anniversary date. And it was weird because when I got to 5 years away, I thought it was a long time. 5 years away was before I moved here, but I was looking for a house. Now it's 10 years.
10 years sometimes feels quick, but then if you put it in like comparison to something else, you realize that it's a long time.
Yeah. So the video I put out, check it out on my good old YouTube channel when you get a chance. 30 minutes of me rambling, one take, because I can do it. Talking about how my life has changed the past 10 years, what I've done, starting the podcast with Ian, the books, video game years, working with Retroware, going to conventions, yada, yada, yada. But I didn't get into the details of my job and why I quit and what I went through. Ian knows a little bit of it, but not everything. So you're curious about, you know, what I did and, you know, my move and everything and how it sort of evolved.
I mean, I've heard most of this stuff, but I'm sure they are very curious.
Can
about...
you pretend, Ian, that yeah, you
I
haven't
mean,
asked?
I've heard. I mean,
Ian, you're breaking the fourth wall, Ian.
Pat, I've known you for how long? Oh I know God. These things. People don't think I don't
Ian,
know.
Ian, this
these
is
things.
Show business.
People don't think I don't know.
This is show business. You don't know everything. You know most of it.
But yes, of course. I mean, it's okay. An interesting story, especially the decision to walk away from it.
But about the job specifically. So I was a supervisor.
Supervisory for, Sam.
So like the lowest you can be for like management, like the lowest you could be. And I led a team of God at the height 5 or 6.
And this was work from home for the second half?
No, this was in Jersey before I moved.
Okay. But it was you did do work from home out here for a while. You did.
See, Ian thinks he knows everything, he doesn't. Yes. So I was a manager.
Right. No, I said
I was a
the
manager there.
Half. Yeah.
So I started the job in 2006. It was my third corporate job. I came from consumer market research before that, and then that was bad too. And then market research sucks in general. And then I went to the healthcare side. What I did was I managed people who deployed internet surveys to healthcare providers, doctors, nurses, healthcare practitioners, nurses assistants, things like that, physician assistants, a lot of PA work.
And there's some medical stuff.
Yeah. So that's what we did. A lot of it was Salesforce effectiveness. I hate to say this is why it was a bad Salesforce effectiveness. What does that mean, Ian? It means the effectiveness of the message from the pharma sales rep when they talk to doctors to peddle their drugs.
Right.
Basically, you ask the doctors, well, what did our rep talk to you about the past month? What do you remember the message being? How effective were they doing?
Yeah, how effective is your advertising?
Basically.
Our advertising.
And there's a ton of money in that.
Obviously. Oh, yeah. Tons. Yeah.
So I'm not saying none of the clients we worked for were altruistic. Some were medical tools and surgical tools and things like that. But the vast majority is literally SFE, Salesforce Effectiveness. That's what it was. So you're working for big pharma companies in Jersey, tons of pharmaceutical companies in New Jersey. Lots.
Like headquarters?
Yes. That's where they're headquartered.
So like GlaxoSmithKline and
Bristol-Myers Squibb. J&J, I think, is involved in some of it. I think there's Merck. Merck is gigantic. They're all
right.
Jersey or like Eastern Pennsylvania. They're all headquartered there. And then even like the eye care ones like Vistacon and things like that. I think they're mostly over there for like contact lenses. So that's what I did. And I also project managed myself. So I basically did two jobs in one, really one and a half. So it started okay. It started where, I'm not being overworked to death. Yeah, I'll put in a 45-hour work every now and then. That's highly stressful or like a 50. But it's okay. It's not every week. It's like once every 8 or 9 or 10 weeks, and it's fine. The problem was, this is going to be both me explaining things about what I did and also warnings about how not to work. The problem is I work too hard. And I was plucky young Pat. And I'm not saying to be a lazy worker. What I'm warning against is do not go out of your way to do things for a company that isn't in your job description, expecting some sort of reward or recognition.
Do and, what's asked of your job description.
Yes.
But you do not have to go out of your way to bend over and please corporate masters.
Yes. And I'm not saying you there aren't jobs out there or corporations you work for that will reward someone like that.
Sure.
My job did not. While on my job, I trained. I was managing and training new employees. I was always good at training and getting people up to speed, new employees and things like that. I created – it's so fucking stupid because they probably still use it today. I created like a 75 to 90 page manual step by step about how to train an employee, basically going through the entire process of running a project. I mean like intensive, like well detailed, using the software – using
so training material.
Yeah, that didn't exist before. I created it for the company. And I wasn't asked to. I did it because I figured, well, this is smart to do this because I'm going to be training employees and other people will. And it's going to be to the benefit of the company that we have this all laid down.
I mean, it was smart to do it.
It absolutely was smart, except like I got nothing for that.
Yeah, there was no recognition.
And besides that, I went out of my way to obviously help out and pitched in, and eventually got to the point where I was so efficient. Obviously, what I was doing, I was doing the work of at least 1.5 employees.
Sure.
Sometimes two. By the time I got to the end, I was doing two employees' work, which I'll get to. And obviously, my salary wasn't commensurate. I wasn't paid a little, but I wasn't paid what I was doing. Well, that's fine. A lot of people don't get paid, unfortunately, what they think they're worth. The issue was. Though that it was the lack of respect from my boss. Her name was Terry. Terry, if you're out there, not good things to say about you, Terry.
Terry
was the perfect middle manager who had no idea what you did day to day, could not do any of the steps of the process of what you did, yet could try to tell you what to do. The worst type of manager is the person that has no idea what you do. Or how you do it. And that was Terry.
So they just tell you how to do things, but they couldn't they couldn't step in and do shit if they needed to.
They would give you words of encouragement. Oh, or you need to do this, or this is our deadline. And it's like, you don't know what's on my plate. I ran on average between 5 and 8 projects at the same time.
Sure.
From front to back with that. And so it was one of those things where like you kind of knew about it, but it was the first time I experienced it that close up where like my main boss. Because my job before that, the boss is kind of knew what we're doing. She had no idea. The person that eventually became my boss, Chris, he knew what I did and eventually got into a kind of partial boss position. And it was great because Chris was fantastic. And I love Chris if you're out there. Probably the best boss I've had. Very understanding, didn't push you too hard, but kept you accountable. The perfect boss, Chris. And Chris left the company, I believe, after I left as well.
Places like that don't hold on to good employees.
They can't, unfortunately, because when you have a toxic culture, the toxic culture pushes those people away. Where it's just like not well, just
you can't ever pay those people what they're worth.
Not just that, but it goes sort of you butt heads against the people that are there to pick up a paycheck that don't know what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah.
Like Terry. And Terry was a chain smoker.
Terry.
She would take smoke breaks. I'm serious because I was in a managerial position in Jersey. I'll never forget this, Terry. Fuck you for this. This was demeaning and this is a power play and there was no reason to do this. We had a lot of empty offices, window offices. I had the coveted corner cubicle because no one behind me. The fucking air duct right above me that blew on me constantly, and I got sick from it. I don't think I ever told you that. I was like constantly sniffling.
I would have loved that, but that's not getting for you.
Microbes and bacteria and viruses on you. And I complained about it, and until they finally, I had to get instead of them doing something like redirecting it, I had to get a fucking piece of cardboard, stick it above me to redirect the air. I just remembered that. I had to literally do that because it was coming down right on my head. Anyway,
Jesus.
Terry's office was to my left. She had the corner office. I had the corner cube. You want to say that? But I was in a managerial position. I held meetings, and there was always offices available. There was like 6 to 8 offices from between our two offices where you'd have people visit from North Jersey. And I asked Terry, I'd go work in there sometimes. I said, Terry, can I have a permanent office here? Like, I think it makes sense. It would be nice. They're not being used. That's right. They weren't being used. And she refused. Total power play dick move. That at that point, I'm like, yeah, no, she's that sort of person. So I would just start going in the office and using it. I would just use it. And someone says something because it's private. It's nice. You can close the door. And so it was bad. And then there was the sexual harassment that happened. It mildly happened that I told you it happened a little bit at Suncoast Motion Picture Company.
Yeah,
it definitely happened here. And again, sexual harassment isn't always about someone being attracted to someone. It's about power.
Oh, it absolutely is.
The same way with sexual assault. A lot of times it's just power play. It has nothing to do with the sexual proclivities, things like that.
It's almost 100%. Just like they say, rape is not about sex. Sexual harassment is oftentimes not about sex either. Mm-hmm. They're both power moves to make the other person feel scared and diminished.
Yes. So this is why, again, I'm still in Jersey. In my corner office, I should have went to HR, but it was like, well, this isn't too bad. I knew it was inappropriate. I should have went because it happened more than once. Where
always got to report to HR.
Yeah, who knows if they would have been retaliatory, but the way I thought at the time, I was in my late 20s, though, I was a lot more unbalanced and unhinged. I would have got a lawyer.
Lots of people don't go to HR specifically because they think it's going to be retaliatory.
So I got the old come up behind me and start massaging me thing happen to me.
Mm.
So how's it going? How are we doing here?
Is this Terry?
This is Terry still. And I don't think she was attracted to me. So I was like, that was weird. And I was just like, this is weird. I was working a little later, but it happened more than once. And it was weird, and it was totally a power play thing.
Sure.
And it was disgusting.
Yeah.
And that happened to me. And it's not something
that's awful.
I don't feel like I wasn't like totally violating, but obviously it wasn't right. And then I don't know if you did it to someone else. So it was weird. So basically, I worked there for a few years, and I wanted to move out here. We know the story. And so I took a title demotion, but then they kept my same salary, which was a net positive for moving to a better location.
Yeah.
But cost of living is a little bit higher in San Diego than Jersey. Jersey is not cheap, but it's, San Diego's higher. So
California in general.
Yeah, San Diego's top 10 in the U.S., usually 9 or 10. Four might be higher now, who knows. So moved out. So instead of to justify them giving me the same salary but not managing, they threw more work at me, projects. I was already doing a full project manager's job load on top of the manager responsibility. I was then quickly doing the work between 1.5 and 2 people and doing it efficiently. And that's the problem. Again, problem. When you work at most jobs, when you're efficient and good at your job, you're rewarded with more work. Not more money, not a better position. They throw more work at you to see what your breaking point is, even though the other people are doing less work than you and have the same position or a similar position. I was doing more work than all the other project managers. I knew it. But I was sort of like, well, I'm working from home, whatever. Problem is my health took a turn for the worse. Ian saw it. Your expression, I looked gray.
Yes, you looked gray.
I was just totally burnt out. I took a vacation every now and then, but not what I should. I was not using. I got 3 weeks paid vacation. I never took 3 weeks. I took like 7 days a year. But I banked them. I almost never took sick days. I should have took sick days since those were separate and not bankable. I should have took a sick day every other fucking week or month. I think I got 10 a year for sick days. I should have took those.
Use your personal days.
Use your sick days.
Sick days, yeah.
Because those are unpaid.
Yep.
Those will count against you. Like the paid ones, you know.
Right, because they don't bank.
Yeah, they don't bank. So it went along, and then the issue was, which happens with other companies sometimes, where it didn't start like this, where when someone left the company, whether they got a better position elsewhere or they quit or fired, they stopped replacing people.
Yeah.
So a team of 7 or 8 or 9 people that I start with now is a team of 5 or 6.
And that's how you know it's a gross, bad corporation to work for, because they see that people leave. They see that everyone else can struggle and get it done.
Yeah,
and they look at
crunch.
And they look at their bottom line and they go, well, we're making more money now, so why would we do that?
Yeah, Pat's doing 5 or 6 projects now. He can do 8 instead of 6 at the same time. That's how they think. unfortunately. So that became bad. Dealing with the employees, dealing with co-workers, I was very good at playing the game, but I hated it. It ate away at my soul. Putting on the happy face of people that could be like trying to undercut you the next day, or speaking behind your back, or try to get you into trouble for a project thing that wasn't your fault at all. That was something you had to live with, because you had to work with the salespeople, and the salespeople don't give a shit about you for the most part. Some are good, but most just want the bottom line. They want their commission. They want a deadline. The client says they want to stick to it. They don't even care what it takes to get there, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I worked hand in hand with salespeople all the time that interface with the, with our huge clients. So, you had to deal with that. And then it's interesting when you think about working in an office, that it's true. You see these people more than your family and friends. You're 40 hours a week with these people.
Oh yeah.
And it you have to force yourself to like these people, and then go out to lunch. I'm not saying there weren't nice people, but there were definitely, like, you're forcing yourself. I'll put it this way. Am I speaking to anyone I used to work with? No. I'm speaking to one person.
Oh, impressive.
My friend Tommy.
Oh, that's right. I forgot you said
one person.
Yeah,
that I say I'm friends with and still speak to fairly regularly. And then there's a couple people I think about that I'll catch up with every few years maybe, and that's it. These are people you go out to lunch with and you spend time with, and then it was weird because their personal life would bleed into yours sometimes because they tell you about their problems while at lunch, and I feel like saying this is inappropriate. I'll never forget this, and God, if someone's listening that works with me, I hate calling this out. It was the three of us, three guys. We go out to lunch, like maybe once a week. We go out to a diner. We loved Indian food.
Sure.
Never forget this as long as I live, Ian. I think I'll never told you this story. And this was a nice guy, not nice, your average white male. You know, nice dude, probably like 38, 39, you know, wife and a couple kids probably. We're out at lunch, and the second person, who was probably in his like mid to late 40s with the family, and me, I'm 27, you know. All of a sudden, the guy goes, "So, does your wife and girlfriends do they do that oral sex thing?" And me and the second guy look at each other like, "Yeah, that happens when you're with someone. Why do you ask?" Yeah, my wife doesn't like doing that. She says it's against God's will, so we don't do that. And do you think that's not normal? And we're looking at you like, what the fuck did we just? I just want to eat my chicken tandoori.
Right.
Like, what the hell is
this?
I don't want to talk about this
at lunch.
And so it was interesting to have to deal with stuff like that and try to be friendly with people that, like, you have no choice. You can't put up total walls because you're with these people and you have to work with them.
Yeah.
You have to work with these people. But it just ate away at my soul. It just ate away at the soul. I wear my heart in my sleeve a lot of times, but so you had to do a lot of acting. You had to pretend to like all these people that you couldn't fucking stand.
Of course.
Again, not everyone. There's like a handful of people at each office that I adored and liked. Christina at the one office, I still like you. I'll probably reach out. I might have your number still and talk to you. But it was bad. Then there's the other thing that happened that was this interesting aside, that there was a contingency that thought I was gay, and this is why. I was deathly afraid of being accused of sexual harassment so far that I not only never like hit on a woman,
mm-hmm.
I never even approached, even got to that point where I was totally neutral, like sort of like asexual, you could say, sure. In the office. Which is not healthy, by the way. You got to have some, we're humans, we have to have some leeway here. But there was a woman from the other office that was attractive, and we did go out for like drinks as a group, that asked around if I was gay because I never hit on her. And I'm like, well, that's interesting.
That's weird.
and then I will throw you under the bus, Chris. The Chris that I did like, mm-hmm. who was gay, mm-hmm. by the way, he wasn't sure if I was gay. So he called my friend Tommy, who is gay, and Tommy knew I wasn't gay, and he said, "Hey, Tommy, yeah, just wondering, is Pat gay?" And Tommy had the best response, said, "I don't know, Chris, let me get out my gay phone book and look him up to see." And so he kept it a total mystery, even though he knew. So it was just a fun thing. It probably didn't help that I also wear, probably out of fashion, I wear like really those tight, stretchy shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And I did like baking brownies for all the women in the office. I brought it. I did cook and bring in cakes and brownies. I'm not saying you're heterosexual. You don't do that. But probably in that office environment, probably I was the only guy doing that. I like to cook. And I didn't want to eat all the brownies myself, Ian. That's all.
Good brownies.
So you're saying, what was the breaking point? Do you remember what the breaking point was where I told you I got to get out? Do you remember the fall of 2011, what happened to me?
Yes, vaguely.
You remember?
Tell me.
Okay. I had my surgeries done.
Yeah.
So I had 3 touch-up surgeries done at the same time. This was all at the same time. Who does 3 surgeries at once? A fucking crazy person does.
A person who's trying to do way too fucking much.
A person that cares way too much about the company. And this is another warning. Never be loyal to a company. You can be loyal to people you like, you work with, to individuals, not to a company. And I
correct.
I at that point, they were too intertwined with me. So I said, I'll have 3 surgeries at once because I'll be out less time. And that'll be good for the rest. The team was already hurting. We were down employees that weren't rehired to help. So I had a surgery on my finger because I broke it in college. They had to clean up some crap in there. It's still not 100%. My toe that was broken since I was a child, I had issues with. And the worst one was my knee. They had to clean up all the shit in my knee from my ACL surgery.
Yeah, I remember that. My knee was bothering me. That was really, really bad.
I'd be able to run, but it'd be inflamed.
Right.
So I had 3 surgeries at once done by the doctor. And I scheduled only a week off for that. Only a week.
I definitely recall that.
Because I'm fucking crazy. And then I remember I was in so much pain still after the week. I had to say, I can't come back this week. Yeah, I need a second week. And I'd never taken sick days, like 1 sick day or 2. I never took off multiple days. Never did that. Never. The other manager in my position at the other office, because we share jobs between offices, I found out she started talking trash about me.
Yeah.
Joanne, fuck you.
Joanne.
You old bag. Fuck you, Joanne. I was always nice to you. And then this is what I got for it. She thought I was faking. She thought I was milking 3 surgeries. How dare I be out for 2 weeks for 10 business days? How dare I, doing 3 surgeries at once? Once that got back to me from a reliable sources, she said this on a fucking call.
Yeah.
She said this on a meeting call. She said this. Once this got back to me, it was the beginning of the end. It should have hit me sooner. I went to HR. I said, that does not play. I heard her say this stuff. And so that was the beginning of the fucking end. I said, I need to get out. This is the way I'm being treated, not just by the company, but by my fellow workers who I'm trying to look out for. This is the fucking end of the line.
And you said she was a manager?
She was in the same position I had before I moved, and they gave me that title demotion.
Okay, gotcha.
And so I'd worked with her, and we basically managed different teams, different locations.
Got it.
And so at that point, I'm like, fuck this place. And I don't think anything was done about when that happened. So fast forward to the next May.
Yeah, unfortunately, being an asshole is not actionable.
But that's a shitty thing to say about someone's surgery.
It's absolutely shitty to say. I'm just saying, like, there's...
You think I'm fucking faking milking injuries? Holy shit. Anyway, the next May, I decide I was at my breaking point. Ian saw my bad health. I wasn't taking lunch breaks. I was working crunchy. Like I said on the video I came out with, it's not just the fact that, hey, you might do a 45-hour work week. There's stressful hours.
Right.
There's a difference between a 40-hour work week and a stressful 40-hour work. High tension. If you fuck up, it's your ass. Client-driven stuff, awful. I finally went to HR. I called them up. I said, I'm miserable. I was honest. I said, I'm not sugarcoating. I said, I'm miserable. I don't feel respected. I'm overworked. That shit that happened in the fall, that Joanne said, that doesn't fly. I said, I'm not quitting. I said, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to still do my job. I'm going to do it competently, but I'll be looking for a new job, and that's it. And I'm going to be working. I'll be clocking in and out, and don't expect anything more than what the average worker would do. That's what I said.
Yeah.
And the HR person, to their credit, said, I appreciate it, your honesty. I'll get back to you. The HR person in Jersey, she liked me. She was actually fairly nice. She used to cry to me sometimes because she had to fire people. I literally had to like talk to her. I'd be like, I feel like saying, well, you shouldn't have this job. But I mean, like, that happened in both locations, actually.
I don't think empathetic people can remain in an HR position for long because they're not your friends. They are cover for corporations.
Fuck you, Terry. Another story. Fuck you, Terry. Terry, you fired people. I was responsible for helping hire people, making those decisions. I was never responsible for firing people. Fuck you, Terry. You fired someone. You made me go to the HR and sit in with it as their manager said to you. You should have had the fucking balls to sit in that meeting. If you fire the person, Terry, you should have to sit in with HR. Not me.
Yeah.
Not me. I just sit in with people being fired. Then afterwards, the HR person starts fucking crying. And I got to console them. I forgot about that. Fuck you, Terry. Anyway, so that was the last straw. Last straw. And then I also had a new manager that came from the consumer side from a merger. And she didn't respect me at all. And I felt like saying, you're from the consumer side. You're managing me. Consumer market research is totally different than healthcare. You don't know my fucking job. You know the steps involved. You don't know the job of what I do. So she didn't like me too. So I think I think my HR person had a conversation with them. And then they said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have you work out next week, be your last week to offload. They said, we're not going to stop you from getting unemployment insurance. That's all I've said. I said, I want this in writing. I said,
yes.
I said, I want this because they can try to block it. If they say I quit, I said, I'm not quitting. They said, no, we're going to come to terms. So we came to terms for me to leave. And then, so I was paid, I think I was paid an extra week for like a 2 weeks notice. They gave me an extra week. And then I got obviously my paid time off. So I got paid like six extra weeks on top of that. And I was done. I was out. And not many calls or emails saying, hey, we're going to miss you. That's the way it is in the corporate world. Once you're gone, out of sight, out of mind, persona non grata. There's a couple of people, but for the most part, though, we don't care. You're gone. And it's weird how that infects the corporate world, where like you lose your humanity to the point where like you can just block someone like that. But it's like you're gone. It's like cutting off a member of your family. You don't matter anymore. You literally don't matter.
Yeah.
You're done. You're done. So it took me, Ian will test it. It took me several months to recover from the stress and from the unwinding of all that shit built up in me. I was, I did like the NES Punk stuff. Mm-hmm. I did one a month for the rest of the year. I remember I did that. I did like Commando. I did Scoon. I did the Sega Master System, not Sega, the Car Wars Christmas stuff. I did all that stuff that year. I did track.
Yeah, you did quite a bit.
I did the track and field one right away.
Yep.
But it took a while for me to get my bearings and to come back to who I was, if that makes sense. So there you go. You got any questions about anything else that happened there? That was most of the highlights, but it was funny because it did not start off as the worst job. It turned into it.
As a corporation starts to see you, sees what you'll do, realizes that there's someone that they can take advantage of.
Yeah.
They'll just keep. And it sometimes it is. It's like a straw at a time, but they will just keep building up the pressure until you break. And they expect, I think there's an expectation that you'll break and leave and they'll hire someone else in like that. I've seen a lot of people who have done corporate jobs for a while, and I feel like it's almost like beating the system because you're not meant to put in that sort of environment. You just can't sustain yourself and take care of yourself.
I mean, I could have if I slacked off.
Well, sure.
If I honestly worked what I thought the average worker should be doing, but then they would have put me up. They would have said, well, you perform better for it. We're going to do performance reviews. I could have milked that out and not be scared. That probably would have been the way to go. Honestly, I would have said, I'm going to work on what the average person works on, and that's it.
Well, and personally, for me, I can't take it easy. Like that stress of not getting, so many people are like, whatever, it's work. But like for me, that stress of not getting something done,
yes,
will always keep you working harder for certain. But that's for certain people.
But that's bad.
Yes, it is
because it's unhealthy. And then if you're, like I said, you're not getting compensated for it. I didn't get even raises the past few years. So that stopped too. I think it stopped across the company. But like, it was nuts. This was what would have happened if I did the average amount of work. They would have put me on performance plans. I would have said, "Oh yeah, I'll do better," and I think it would have been status quo for a while,
right?
Until they got sick of me. just because they would have spited themselves.
Sure.
Companies will spite themselves. This company should have let me stay on from a totally objective standpoint. After I said I was miserable, they would have said, okay, if he's going to still perform to a decent expectations, he's still better than an average worker, he should do it. But they don't want potential troublemakers around like that.
No, once someone gets unhappy, they
don't want you out. That's what happens. I was shocked it was that quickly. It was like within the day, Ian, from the phone call. It was like 10 a.m. I'm miserable, and here's what's going to happen, as I said to them. I think it was that afternoon, like 3 hours later. They probably had a couple meetings. What can we offload Pat's work? And then it was out the door.
That's it. They don't want that to spread.
Yeah. I mean, I worked from home at that point, so it's like, well, we don't have to have an awkward thing, because I've been in mass firings as well. The company had two mass firings while I was there too, where they literally put 20 people in a conference room
and we're like, you're all gone.
Oh yeah, that's happened. Oh no, they do the opposite. They do the people that aren't fired. I forget what happened. This happened twice in the one office. They get everyone away who's not fired, so everyone can clear out their desk so everyone doesn't see it. I forget. It's fucking awful either way. It's like inhumane. I understand if you have to let people go, but mass firings are never pretty.
No,
to do that, but yeah, that's my story there.
All right,
and as stressful as my current job ever gets, or as I say, you know, I'm suffering. You can hear some of the stuff that happens. It's still better than that.
No, of course,
it's still better than that.
Nothing like working on your own time.
This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by Monk Pack. Monk Pack offers low sugar, keto friendly bars, which are plant based, gluten free, and non GMO. They're the perfect snack for anyone who's trying to eat better or cut back on sugar and carbs without sacrificing taste. Monk Pack keto granola bars and nut and seed bars contain 1 gram of sugar or less, 2 to 3 grams of net carbs, and each bar contains 150 calories or less.
Monk Pack have an amazing chewy texture and come in delicious flavors like sea salt dark chocolate, coconut cocoa chip, and caramel sea salt. My favorite is easy, the coconut cocoa chip. I love anything cocoa and coconut. These are really like chewy and satisfying, like the granola bars you remember from your youth.
Sure, I enjoy the nut and sea bar. Speaking of coconut, they have the coconut almond dark chocolate. It's delicious, but my absolute favorite is the peanut butter dark chocolate, and they're good for snacks or for a dessert. You don't feel guilty eating these. They're delicious.
You can shop online and you can avoid another trip to the grocery store and have Monk Pack delivered right to your door. These bars are not just for people eating keto. They are a great snack for anyone looking to reduce their sugar intake while still enjoying delicious, flavorful snacks. These make a great midnight snack. I usually wake up at like midnight or 1. I don't feel so bad about having one of these in the middle of the night. They contain real ingredients that are delicious and nutritious for your whole family. And in addition to being keto friendly, the bars are also gluten-free, plant-based, and non-GMO. There's no sugar, alcohols, soy, or artificial flavors.
Get 20% off your first purchase of any Monk Pack product by visiting monkpack.com and entering our code CUPODCAST at checkout, or just click the link in the description down below to get 20% off. Monk Pack is so confident in their product that it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll exchange your product or refund your money, whichever you prefer. So go get some yummy, healthy bars. Go to monkpack.com and use our code CUPODCAST to get 20% off, or click the link in the description below. We have voicemails, Ian.
We do.
You go to anchor.fm/the CU podcast. You go, you leave us a voicemail, you keep it short and sweet, and I will love you forever. I love you forever for doing that. I'll like you. There's the first
I'll
one.
Like you for a while.
Right.
Hey guys, Andrew from Quebec, Canada here. Have you guys ever read the Nintendo Power comics, the Mario and the Zelda one?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And then the Star Fox one, that was the Nintendo Power issues. I believe they compiled them and did maybe a trade paperback.
There are trades. Vonnie's got them. I've never read them before, but they definitely made trades of them.
When my father forced me to throw out my issues, before I did that, I would cut them out. I still have the cutout ones. It's kind of sad. I have just the cutout.
Oh, sure.
I remember really enjoying the Mario one a lot, for the humor,
yeah,
and how weird it was.
No, Vonnie really likes them, and I've meant to read them. I just never have gotten around to it.
And there was a Link to the Past one. I did the Star Fox one, all in like the early 90s. They did that one.
Pat, Ian, this is Matt from Rochester, New York again. Going to be serious here for a minute. Just want to give another shout out to Andrew in Ukraine. I know we haven't heard from him in a while. Andrew, I hope things are going okay over there. I know it's still a dangerous situation, but we haven't had as many updates you know, with everything going on in the country right now. But hope everything's okay. We hope to hear from you soon. Thanks, guys. See ya.
Well, I mean, it's still a war.
Yeah.
It's now mostly what the eastern part of it. It's getting bogged down. And this thing they're saying, from what I've read, it could last years. This is not potentially going to be a conclusion that's going to come quick.
Right. No, it's going to last a long, long time.
But hopefully Andrew's okay.
Hey, Pat and Ian, it's Noah from Jeffersonville, Ohio. And I was just wondering, I was thinking about it. What if they did a Vectrex mini console? Now you could have like a little, just like pretty much the same size, just obviously a little lighter, have a better joystick and buttons, feel a little bit better. And they could have like the options for overlays, all the games on the console. Would you think they'd have to do a really low run of them because the Vectrex is such a niche kind of thing? Or do you think that would work? How do you think they should do it? Thanks, guys. Love the podcast.
It had to be a handheld, right? If it's a handheld, it has a... Could you do a handheld with a built-in vector screen easily?
Well, no, you couldn't do anything with a built-in vector screen easily. You would emulate, and then I would say apply the overlays in software.
Done that in emulators on computers, yeah.
And I think it could be, you know, fun enough. But, right, I think mini consoles in general are just less popular than they were. And, no, I don't think there's a big enough market for it to, you know,
the thing is produce it. The form factor is all wrong.
Look at all the mini arcade cabinets that they've done. You could do it very similar to that. You could do it similar to the mini Astro City or Taito Egret 2. You could totally do the form factor. Would anyone buy it?
Yeah, it would be awkward. I think those controllers suck. The joysticks on those are terrible. People don't talk about that. How the Vectrex joysticks. I mean, we love the Vectrex. It was one of a kind. But the controllers were stinky.
Yeah.
The spring on the little metal thing, wasn't even plastic on top of that, and the buttons were like squishy. The four button layout does not work. They weren't smart enough to do a two and two. They did four.
Yeah, four.
They did the Neo Geo almost layout back.
Right.
7 years before it existed. Six, 7 years. Now I'd be down for it.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Farron McKenzie from Inverness in Scotland.
Hey.
And I really wanted to ask you guys if you've got any all-time favorite arcade machines that you like to play, if you guys still enjoy visiting the arcade, and what you think the future of arcades is in general. Okay, guys, keep up the good work.
Oh, I own my all-time favorite ones, Rolling Thunder. Ian owns an arcade machine with Final Fight on and other boards.
Yep. I mean, all-time favorites, probably Star Wars Arcade and Centipede, two Atari games. I don't ever talk about Atari, but they're both ones that are really hard to recreate properly anywhere else. So those would probably be my favorite machines.
Get the arcade one-up one with the yoke.
And then in terms of the future of arcades, I think it's maybe not like blisteringly bright, but it's certainly better than it was maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's barcades. That's kept arcades alive, and that's why machines that used to be worth $300 now were $2,000.
Yeah,
from barcades, because they're not making any more new Simpsons arcades out there. You know, they're stuck in some people's private collections in a warehouse somewhere, but they're not pumping them out. Besides the arcade one up ones, but no respectable barcade would use those, would they? Who knows? Next one.
Hey guys, this is Jamie from Toledo here once again. Two questions for you. First one. Pat, since Frank has no online presence outside of your YouTube channel, how does he feel about having online fans? And how does he react meeting them in public? Second question, when did you guys become untalented, jealous gatekeepings?
Oh.
Thank you, guys. Love the podcast.
I guess that's when we reported the truth about a failed console. That's when it started happening. Frank, what does Frank think? I think he's flattered. But Frank is a minor egomaniac, but he also likes the attention. So, like, he gets recognized in public a lot, which he's revealed more and more while he's working because he stands out. I don't get recognized in public, really. I do, but it's rare. It sounds like it happens to Frank more regularly.
I used to all the time, but, like, I would say probably around the time we were talking about the chameleon, and since then it's, you know, tapered off.
Outside, obviously, people recognize you that came into the store, but...
Oh, yeah, the store and stuff like that, but like, outside general, in public.
Like, going to a restaurant, things like that.
Although, Brian, the bartender at Aero Club, knows both of us.
Someone took a picture of me when I went to Seaside Heights a few weeks ago. Someone recognized me at Casino Pier. They're like, hey, are you Pat? I'm like, yeah. So that was interesting. And then they're probably wondering what the hell you're doing here. I'm like, well, you know, I'm visiting Pennsylvania. I'm here with my sister. What was the other thing? Other question about, oh, conventions. Yeah, Frank was great. He was bubbly with everyone. He's been to a couple of two or three SoCal retro gaming expos. Frank was always good. He just didn't like the time off. He didn't like the time commitment to go to the conventions. Sure. That was always a thing. Getting him, he had to take off a Friday. He's like, I got to do a Friday.
He'd enjoy 2 hours of it. And then
Frank doesn't like traveling. Sure. He doesn't like getting cars and going places. Like that's probably what it comes down to. If it was like a mile away, he would have no problem with it. That's the thing.
Right.
Next.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Max calling from Edison, New Jersey.
Charlotte!
It was a pleasure meeting you at Too Many Games, and your Q&A was a ton of fun.
Thanks, Max.
I look forward to seeing you and hopefully Ian at a future convention. My question is about the graded VHS tape, since it's still somewhat fresh. We know that graded media just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense because it takes away its intended purpose. But do you feel like graded VHS tapes make at least a little bit of sense, almost as much sense as graded sports cards?
No. This is why. With a sports card, you can see everything. I thought more and more about it and how easy it's going to be to counterfeit sealed VHS tapes. I had a conversation with someone, actually a collector, about it. They didn't seal those well to begin with. They were for rental stores, remember, for the first several years.
Right.
Maybe 10 years of VHS life. Those weren't like probably like high-end sealing things like you see like with the HCM on an NES game, for example.
So some of them do have unique printing and stuff like that on them, which I think would make those harder to counterfeit. But
plus, you can throw any old tape in there.
Yeah.
You can't identify it from the bottom.
I'm not into like graded media in general, but I think VHS is a lot like comic books in that you get art on the front. Some people like it, and it's something movies these days are easily accessible in all sorts of other forms. So I don't really care that it's, you know, trapped in there, just like a comic book. Yes, you're taking away its intended purpose, but you know, most of the comic books that you'd want to read that are graded, that are regularly graded, have reprints and trades and all sorts of other ways you can enjoy it. And movies are the same way. I think it's weird that we're grading VHSs, but in some weird way, even though I kind of understand the thought process, but it's not something I'd ever be into. I understand how they got there. I understand how they got there.
No, again, I see counterfeiting being a bigger issue. I think it'll be easier to counterfeit the seals. I'm not even talking about the covers. I think that'll be easier too, versus like an NES game. And like I said, if you don't find the original tape, well, throw any tape in the bottom because they weren't marked in the bottom usually. It's a standard VHS tape. They were all about the same damn thing, every VHS tape. So we say, well, dude, the grade on this company. Okay, yeah, sure. I get it.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Steve from Bethlehem. This question is mainly for Pat. Pat, as a self-described fan of Spider-Man, who would you say is the greatest Spider-Man artist of all time? And if you say it's anyone other than Todd McFarlane, you are just incorrect. Thanks, guys.
Wow, Steve. Okay. John Romita is the greatest Spider-Man artist ever. He established the quote-unquote look of a lot of the characters going forward. There was a lot of first appearances, like Kingpin, that's iconic. You think of Kingpin, it's Romita, and things like that. Tom McFarlane, not saying he's a bad artist, was not the person for Spider-Man. He drew Spider-Man like a fucking football linebacker. He made him look overly bulky and big.
Yeah.
Spider-Man is supposed to be like 5'9", 5'8", 160 pounds, like dripping wet. Spider-Man is not supposed to be that big and bulky. And how can I say this politely? He drew Mary Jane looking like a porn star. Mary Jane went from like girl next door cute to like, oh, looks like a porn star now. Like just like made her look like a totally different look to the character. Never liked that. Just too over the top on the details.
Not huge into it, but I do think that's partially it's McFarlane's style, but it's also that was just the 90s in general, was beefcaking everyone up, women having like no waist, dudes having muscles on muscles on muscles, and McFarlane was a part of that as much as, you know, people like Layfield. And I'm not saying it's good, and I agree with Jim your Lee statement, but
Yeah.
What a weird time for comics.
Yeah.
And Jim Lee did good stuff, but like Jim Lee did that too.
That I did not like comics at that. It's funny because that's when the bubble came. People were buying all that shit, but like that's almost destroyed the industry when you got to by the early to mid 90s. Next one here. McFarlane's the best. Why? Because of Venom? I drew Venom.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. Rick Pasley from Rensselaer, Indiana.
Hey, Rick.
Just want to let you guys know, if you're ever planning on coming to our neck of the woods, try Pizza King. It's great when it comes to pizza. It has the crumbly sausage as well as pepperoni. It's awesome. And it's thin crust. It's very awesome.
All right. Sounds good to me.
As long as I'll always try some new pizza.
As long as you're not putting fucking American cheese slices on top of it, we'll be fine. Right?
That looks okay. Looks all right.
You did the research?
Yeah, the South Bend, Indiana stuff looks good. You also got to be careful, though, because it brings up a lot of pictures of Giant Pizza King in San Diego, which is dog shit pizza.
Okay, Giant Pizza King?
Yeah, Giant Pizza King is not good.
It's called Giant Pizza King, huh?
Yeah, I mean...
I think I've heard of that one before. I do a few more here.
It's my Cotillas.
Oh, okay. Oh, Giant New York Pizza.
Oh, sorry. There is a Giant Pizza King, too. You're okay. Right. They're probably different.
Hi, Pat and Ian. It's Aaron from the UK again. I'm mostly a fifth and sixth console generation collector and player. A big chunk of those systems are CD-based. I just wondered what your thoughts are for the longevity of disc-based systems as they start to break down and fail, including first-party controllers. Do you think people will care about them, say, in 15 years' time to repair them or want to manufacture replacement parts? Or will they be doomed to obscurity as nostalgia wanes, or simply just be emulated for the few enthusiasts remaining? Thank you for answering our previous questions on the podcast, and long live the PlayStation 1.
So polite, Aaron. Thank you.
Yeah. I think for, those generation systems, I think we've already seen it. If you pay attention to emulation and console modding, we've already seen a lot of ODs, optical drive emulators, where they go in the place of the optical drive and you drop the SD card in. Yeah. And you're playing basically, perfect emulations of it through the system on your TV. Interesting question about controllers, though, because I've noticed over time, I used to consider... When I first started working at Luna, I considered the PlayStation and PlayStation 2 controllers to be pretty reliable.
Okay.
No, they're not. I mean, not anymore. It's like that people always worry about planned obsolescence because, when things start breaking, it all seems to happen at once.
Uh-huh.
But it was probably 2017 where we started noticing a lot of broken and bad PS2 and PlayStation 1 controllers.
So the half-life on rubbers and plastic started to go on them?
Yeah, the shoulder buttons started to get weird. Things started breaking. Control sticks started to peel or spin. And, I don't think people are going to bother repairing them, honestly.
They probably can, but there's aftermarket ones for almost all these consoles.
Third-party controllers have increased in quality tenfold in the past 2 decades.
Retrobit does a ton of good ones.
There used to be all sorts of shitty fucking controllers out there, and now, yeah, you can get your Retrobits, and even, I know people don't want to hear it, even some, not all, of some of the Hyperkins were pretty decent replacements, too. Their N64 Cadet pad, by the time they got that was a pretty decent replacement. So, I think the quality of replacement controllers, especially those older ones that use cheaper technology, I think they're just going to get better.
So you think that more of the optical drives with the SD cards for stuff like Dreamcast and PlayStation?
Yes. I think for people who want to do physical as the disc prices start to go up, obviously collectors are going to be collectors, but people who just want to play this shit, if I cared, I would have gone to an ODE as soon as they came out instead of worrying about discs.
It's not the worst thing in the world to replace some mechanics on the disc systems in terms of the drives or the lasers. It's just a pain in the ass.
Well, getting good quality ones. I mean, Sega Saturn laser lens repairs at Luna were like 50-50. He finally fixed Vonnie's. He almost gave up. He had to go through 2 lenses before he got one in there that worked.
They're just sourced.
The quality parts for that sort of stuff doesn't seem to really exist anymore. And if it does, I'm not saying it can't, but if it does, I'm unaware of it. And I think a lot of people just, they've been like, instead of making these specific laser lenses, this ODE option is simpler.
We'll have to 3D print them. or do something, or do like.
But I think a lot of ODEs are like put into 3D printed shells, basically.
But I mean, like for like lenses, there has to be something out there. That does like a run. Oh, we want to do a run of these lenses. If there's no manufacturer anymore, potentially, I don't know. I do a few more here.
Hey Pat, hey Ian, it's Rich again from Cincinnati. Just want to say hey. Got a question for you. Quick question. While growing up, what was the most excited you were for a new system? And which system did you get your very, very first console? Whether it be Christmas, birthday, would like to hear that. And
okay. Which one?
I mean, for me, the system I was most excited to get was a Dreamcast, and I bought that with my own money. I think that was probably my first system that I purchased. Well, no, I bought portables with my own money. Actually, I bought a Genesis with my own money. My brother and I did. But the Dreamcast, I was a senior in high school. I was really into games. I loved Sega stuff. I had done the preview with Hollywood Video the month before where I could rent the Dreamcast and I got Sonic Adventure, and I was fucking pumped to get my Dreamcast. That's probably the most excited I've ever been for a system.
The NES was like, I asked my father for it like every day for Christmas that fall of 87. I mean, I have that picture I put in my video from last year and a half ago, me holding it. My dad found the picture. Like that's the happiest I probably was. Ever, I hate to say it. I was excited about the Super Nintendo as well, getting that. But it's just between, at least for me, when I was 7 versus 11, the magic sort of fades a little bit, at least in my mind, from that. That's a big sort of gap there in terms of how you are as a kid, at least to me.
I was always excited when I knew I was getting a console, yeah. But I just remember getting swept up in the Dreamcast stuff and being really excited about it. I mean, obviously, my brother and I were fucking thrilled when we took our raking money and went and bought our Genesis. When I got the NES, I don't think I was super well aware of what the NES was. Because I think it was like 87, it was 87 or 88, but kids weren't talking about it in school yet.
You should have been in Indiana in 86 in spring on Stranger Things. You'd be talking about it every day with your friends.
Get over it.
People were trying to judge me. Well, there were tech kids ahead of the time. No, it's just bad writing. And then someone said the Duffer Bros aren't, they're from the US, not from Europe. I was like, oh, okay. Did I know where I saw that? Then they should have known better.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Brian. Pat, I was at Too Many Games this past weekend. I was the guy wearing the shirt with a picture of you and I from Too Many Games 2017 on it. Just wanted to ask you both, Pat and Ian, who your favorite Pokemon was. Thanks for everything.
Probably Meowth or Sandshrew. I always say Sandshrew, but I love Meowth as well.
I know about 5 Pokemon, and my favorite is the one I won at Seaside, a Poliwhirl.
Oh, Poliwhirls are great.
I don't know, is that a good or bad one?
It's a good one.
They're on the right side of things?
I think that was like the original Pokemon, too. Actually, I think like when the designer started making the designs, I think it was the first one he drew.
Well, really?
I believe so.
Well, there you go. And it was the first one I won at the Crane Machine back in like 98, when it was still brand new, basically brand new.
It's either the first one he drew or it's his favorite.
It's a bipedal amphibian Pokemon with a spherical body. Is there an attack? It makes you like dizzy?
Sure.
Is that what happens?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's just funny. God, I don't have that plush Poliwhirl. I need a plush Poliwhirl. I think I should buy one. I have a Bulbasaur. You see the Bulbasaur out there?
Mm-hmm.
I won that at Seaside as well. I won that in the Crane. It's a lot harder to win a Crane game than it used to. It used to be skill-based. It used to be you pick it up, you got to the top side of the wing, you were good. Now it just drops it randomly. It just teases you. Crane teases. Claw tease. Sorry. All right. Well, that's it.
That's it. We're done.
That was fun.
I'm so hungry.
We talked about awful jobs. We talked about Monk Pack. Use Coast to You podcast.
Yeah.
It's a fun time.
It was a good one.
And we're going to have great pizza in a month. I can't wait. Three and a half weeks we're going to be in New York.
It's going to be special. I'm looking forward to it. I like being on the East Coast.
You're taking the same one as me, right? Yeah, I booked it.
Yeah, you booked it.
We're doing the red eye.
Yep.
So we'll get there like bright and early Friday and just eat pizza every fucking meal as much as I can.
3 day or 2 day?
Is there something open on Friday? There might be something open on Friday, but it's 2 days for vendors.
Okay. All right.
All right, we'll see you later.
Bye.